these standard poodles become art pieces of artwork.
The way I groom is more artistic than technical.
The dogs definitely have a choice.
I've tried a lot of hobbies. Now I'm on the hunt for my next hobby. Some common, some not so much. This week,
I wish I could compete more. I would compete every weekend if I could.
Dog grooming. I grab some Milk-Bone treats, tell my dog he's a good boy, and give him a makeover. I learn all about the controversial world of creative dog grooming and its competitions.
He is designed in a Jurassic Park theme.
And more importantly, what do the dogs think? So, full disclosure, I don't have a dog anymore. For 12 years, I had a Cocker Spaniel Poodle mix, or what's known as a cockapoo, named Waffle. He wasn't the nicest dog, or the calmest dog, or the most active dog, but he was definitely a dog. Waffle had an exciting life, coming from Montreal, moving around Ottawa, and even living in Winnipeg for a while. The last 8 years of his life, he was my dog and kept me company when I bought a house and moved out, got married, moved to a bigger house, and had my first kid. In that time, he grew a reputation of being loyal to me and barely tolerating anybody else. There are a few dozen of us in the Waffle Bit Me Club. We did take him to an aggressive dog specialist, and we were told that training would only help so much, and it was typical temperament for a Cocker Spaniel. It's because of that temperament and his history that I took up grooming him myself. According to the Cockapoo Club of Great Britain, cockapoos have three types of coats, all of which are low-shedding and low-allergen. Waffle had what's called loose, waxy coat. Often after petting him, you'd find your hand a bit greasy and you'd leave fingerprints everywhere. Besides the waxy feel, his coat was also prone to matting. He had been professionally groomed before many times, so I kind of knew the look. A short, even coat with a miniature schnauzer look. So I went to Walmart and bought the second cheapest grooming kit I could find. And I'll be honest, the first few times I groomed him, I was nervous, and my hands shook a lot. It was partly like defusing a bomb and trying to hold an egg using a vice grip.
That it's like it's a stressful job.
He could bite me at any second, and it felt like I was always one snip away from hurting him. So, every 4 to 6 weeks, I grabbed a handful of treats and my grooming kit, and suffered through 2 hours of shearing and snipping. Sometimes with my wife's help to groom the areas he hated. Both Waffle and I would end up exhausted, and I drenched in sweat from the tension. The best feeling was right after I cleaned up, I knew I had at least a month to go before I had to go through it all over again. If I've been too subtle this far, I'll be clear. Grooming wasn't something I enjoyed or looked forward to. Besides preventing matting and the general comfort, grooming has other benefits. It's like a checkup. I looked for bumps, cuts, and scratches. Eventually, when he got arthritis, I could tell because he didn't like me holding his paws anymore. And it led us to bonding. And I think that's one of the reasons he trusted me more than anybody else. And it kept him clean. With his coat, it was all too easy to get dirty.
Here, there's no holds barred. Everything is pretty much legal with the designs.
Because of grooming's really fast growth, some people are calling for its regulation. Technically, anybody can call themselves a groomer. And looking at how breeding is regulated, with certain breeds created for their looks rather than health, I'm doubtful regulation would have any sort of positive effect here. Alright, so those are the health benefits. Let's get to the world of aesthetic grooming that ranges from breed-specific styling to owner-specific looks to the world of creative grooming.
Right to the north! If you're in the grooming industry, this is the place to be!
A few times I did try to get creative and managed to give him a beard like a miniature schnauzer, but it was always a roll of the dice because he would often move, leaving a huge dent on one side of his face. Art and fashion have a way of becoming a part of every aspect of our lives, including dog grooming. And like most forms of art, it is controversial.
I think people just don't understand and they don't know, so they assume that it's unsafe.
Pets have also become more and more humanized and seen as a replacement for children in some cases. There is that famous news story about a person requesting family leave to take care of their dog. Combining art, fashion, and money, and you get creative dog grooming. This is a pretty controversial subject, and it's not hard to see why, given that animals, especially pets, have a lot of passionate protectors and activists. So where's the line between healthy dog grooming and harmful? To answer that, let's look at some of the things done to dogs as part of creative dog grooming. We're all used to dogs wearing clothes and even wearing matching clothes with their owners, but what about matching nail polish? Podicures, get it? Have become so popular, nail polish brands have capitalized on it by creating dog-specific polish that's odor-free and quick-drying. Which leads me to wonder why human nail polish isn't odor-free and quick-drying. This one doesn't really bother me too much. I had to trim Waffle's nails and don't think nail polish would have harmed him any more than the 5 milk bones it took to get through all 4 paws. It seems that there's a lot of Rufio fans from the movie Hook. So much so that adding feathers to dogs' ears has become a thing. Feathers of all colors are attached to small bits of dog hair with beads. I can see this one becoming annoying and possibly hurting dogs, but I also know that if dogs don't want them on, they're pretty good at scratching their ears and knocking them off. With fur dying, it feels like we're getting into the harmful territory. I don't even think humans dyeing their hair is entirely safe, but that's another issue. There's only so much you can do by attaching things to your dogs. Fur dyeing can range from their ears to tail tips to the whole body. A classic poodle is often groomed and dyed this way. Dyeing can also be done to create patterns like stripes or to make dogs look like other animals, like pandas. It is recommended that human dyes not be used and dog dyes be used sporadically.
It's all temporary, it grows out, washes out.
There are a lot more types of creative grooming accessories, but I stopped looking into it after I found booty bling.
I want to be as good as all the others.
Like any hobby or skill, it's inevitable that competitions will arise. Combine the 3 examples I just gave you, add more accessories and a creative direction, and you get dogs that are groomed and dyed to look like skeletons, adorned with hair extensions and saddle to look like a pony, and made into full works of art depicting under the sea with fish.
The competition, it can involve everything from the sublime to the ridiculous, and it's fun. It is still a grooming competition. This is what people forget. It's not just a dog decorating competition.
The Groom Expo is the largest dog grooming competition, and the majority of competing dogs are standard poodles. Poodles are the best breed since they have white fur, perfect canvas. Their fur grows quickly, and they need constant grooming.
And the poodles have such great hair for it because it just sticks straight out, so it's really easy to sculpt and...
Over 5,000 people attend from across North America. The competition itself is actually kind of interesting. Contestants have under 3 hours to produce the most creative groom. Judges look for clean cuts, clean dyes, and obviously creativity.
Technical aspects of it. How is the scissoring, the clipper work? Is it clean?
It can cost up to $25,000 to practice, prepare, and travel. And the grand prize is typically like 1/5 of that. So why do the groomers do this? There's a typical reason of bragging rights and garnering business, but the majority of these groomers are already really busy. The main reason is simple. They get to exercise their creativity and just the competition itself. Speaking of competitions, there's also classic dog grooming competitions that focus on more traditional looks and techniques. The World Grooming Competition is held around the world with teams attending from different countries. Teams compete in 4 categories. Purebred scissoring, don't laugh. Hand stripping, which is pulling out fur by hand from the root. Spaniels and setters. And poodles. 3 judges score and rank each category from 1 to 20, and the team with the highest collective score wins. So, what do the dogs think of all this?
Good time to spend, bonding, and he gets all this attention after he's done, so.
Some defenses of creative dog grooming are, all dyes are safe and temporary and wash out or grow out. The dogs have a, quote, choice, or else they wouldn't put up with the grooming.
And anyone who's ever tried to give a dog a bath, like in a bathtub at home, understands that they have a choice.
You wouldn't be able to get straight or precise cuts. The dogs are happy if you see them in person instead of just making assumptions from seeing pictures online. I don't think dogs really care what they look like. What they care about is getting attention, so if creative or competitive grooming gets them positive attention from their owners and strangers, they probably like it. I can see these dogs actually being happy. They get a lot of attention and care from those owners. In that way, they're probably happier than typical dogs. And they're probably a lot better trained too. But it's still difficult not to think we're over-humanizing dogs and crossing some sort of line. by turning these living things that we know have the consciousness of two-year-olds into chia pets. But again, even that is projecting our own feelings of being dressed up and groomed. I respect these groomers. Their ability to train and groom their dogs takes a lot of effort. I think I got like 50 groomings under my belt over the years, and I don't think I got 50 times better than my first time. It takes a lot of time, commitment, practice, and most likely, boxes of Milk-Bone treats. This hobby is not for me, but I respect it. Hey, listen, I want you to know that your time is valuable to me, and the fact that you spent it listening means a lot, so thank you. Please remember to subscribe wherever you listen, and maybe tell a friend or two. If you've tried this hobby or you have hobby ideas for me, let me know on Twitter or Instagram. See you next week.